It's the Super 90s, brother!
Trace your private number, baby. All I know is that to me you look like you're lots of fun. Open up them loving arms. I want some, want some. I set my sights on you. I'll no one else will.
Thank you, Dead or Alive, and welcome to the Super 90s Brothers.
Ow!
Where we do hazy memory riffs on the most wedding hookup decade ever. I'm your host, Brennan Pointer, and along with me is my co-host, Adam J. Pitzler, and today we're talking about The Wedding Singer.
Oh!
Oh, man. Have you been to any weddings this summer, Adam?
I did. I just got back from a wedding like 2 weeks ago in Riverside near L.A.
Oh, wow. I was just guessing that you might have gone to a wedding this year. I feel like I've stopped going to weddings so much because weddings are like...
No, I have too. I haven't been to many weddings, but I just went to one.
Was there a wedding singer?
There was not. There was a DJ, he was fine. No, I've got no strong opinions on one or the other.
Yeah.
But a wedding singer, that's kind of a throwback. That would have been cool.
Yeah, I've...
I don't any wedding singers at weddings I've been to. They've been mostly DJs.
I can't think of a wedding I've been to where there's been a wedding singer. So it must be an 80s thing. But I'm sure we'll get into that more later in the show.
Yeah.
It's been a minute since we've podcast. The last time we actually did podcast was live together at Lilac City Comic Con, which was a ton of fun. I feel like we should definitely just say thank you to everyone who came out and supported.
Yeah, it was a very successful event for us. Brennan had some really good marketing ideas to get people involved with our booth, and it worked really well. We had a lot of people engage and sign up for the podcast and for the newsletter and all kinds of shit. Like, it was a overwhelming success. And to anybody that stopped by and like said hello or whatever, we just wanted to make an extra special like thank you to those cool folks, especially that one kid. What was his name? Madden, who's like my new favorite kid there.
Yeah, who listened to our podcast and who I hope is hopefully listening to our podcast now.
Yeah, we were really hoping Madden won the Switch. We were giving away a Switch as part of our promotions, and he was like our favorite little kid there, but he didn't win.
No, he didn't. I forget who won, honestly, but it was a gentleman who came, and he was one of the guys that beat you.
That makes sense, because then he got the bonus raffle tickets.
Exactly. So, I mean, our plan did work. No one won it who, like, didn't beat you.
The guy that, quote, beat me, he just hid away in the corner the whole game. Oh, the only guy that beat me was your buddy.
Yeah, Darian. I mean, you probably played over 100 matches of Super Smash Brothers over the weekend, that weekend, so.
Dude, it was a good idea. It got people working, but I was by, like, the middle of the first day, I was burnt out on that shit.
I kind of just thought, like, when we came up with the idea that people would, like, come by, they'd stop, they'd say hi. But no, it was just a revolving door of people wanting to play Smash Brothers. And I think we had plans to maybe take a break or so every now and again.
Took breaks.
And I had
you're enjoying the fucking festival. Like, Brennan leaves me there playing like Smash Bros against everybody and their brother, and also to sell the podcast and also to fill out registration. And Brennan's like, hey, I'm gonna take my kids to the costume party. I'm like, fine, I'll just do everything.
Perfect. That was the plan.
It all worked out.
It did all work out.
What are we talking about today? That was last time. That was our Comic Con from last month. That we're really thankful to have gone to. It's on to the new stuff.
On the new stuff. Yeah. Well, I mean, we should definitely say, if you are listening, please, give us those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and, follow us on all the socials. What are the socials, Adam?
You can email us at super90sbrothers@gmail.com, all spelled out, at super90sbrothers on Twitter. Brennan is at SpokeCastPods. Are we calling it Twitter? Is it X? I'm a little confused.
I don't know. I don't even... I don't know. Is it X? Like, are we on X? Are we on X?
I don't know. I'm not on X right now. And then you can check out my shit at AdamPitzler.com. But Anyway, forget all that. What we're here to talk about today happened in the 90s. This is the Super 90s Bros, and we're going to talk about something that happened in February of 1998. So what I like to do is I want to, before we get into our main topic, the wedding singer, I want you all to travel back in time for a moment. Picture yourself. Close your eyes, even if you're driving on the freeway. It's early 1998, February. Cigarette smoking has just been banned in public places by in just the state of California. Most states would happen within the next 10 years. President Clinton has just proclaimed that he did not have sex with that woman, and the radio starts playing.
That was the number 11 song in the U.S. at the time. That was Tub Thumpin' by Chumbawamba.
Especially 90s song.
Oh, that is like, I feel like that's a, it's a 90s song, but I feel like I reference that song all the time.
Why?
Well, it's just like, if I have a friend, like if we have people over, like I'll ask them like, hey, do you want to like a vodka drink or a whiskey drink? And then I'm like, oh, and then I'll be like, or a cider. Like, and it's just like, I just say all the drinks and it comes.
You have all four of those readily available at all times?
Probably. Yeah. At my house.
I think we've got whiskey and vodka right now, but I don't have a lager. Sometimes I'll have lagers and Jill likes ciders. So I guess it's not out of the realm.
This song definitely does bring back the memories of the 90s, though.
This song sucks.
It kind of does suck, yeah. It really, I mean, it's, I feel like it was like a sports anthem for some time. I don't know. I don't even really know what it's about. Like, it's just like, there's some like English songs, like some English old folk songs in there. And then like, yeah, it's just, and the lead singer of the band looks like he's like, pale as a ghost and has like this looks like he hasn't slept in like days. It's the band's kind of weird too. So
Tub Thumping, what do we derive from the title Tub Thumping?
That's what I'm thinking. Like maybe you like tub thumping is like when you like you drink, like obviously they're talking about drinking and you drink too much, you end up in the bathtub like with a shower on you. I don't know. What do you think it is?
Well, I'm familiar with people passing out at other people's houses and sleeping in the bathtub when they're drunk.
Mm.
Like that's like they're passed out on the toilet, throwing up or whatever, and they end up sleeping in the bathtub out of the way in case somebody else has to come in and use the facilities.
Mm.
And like, I know that's a thing that some really drunk friend groups do. I think sleeping in the tub sounds fucking terrible. Like I like can't think of a worse place to sleep than like a really hard-edged, well, not hard edge, but like really hard surfaced tub with no where to put your head. Like I wouldn't even know what to do in it.
Yeah.
Like you can't lay down. It's not big enough to lay down flat. And you've got, if you can't lay with your back to the fucking spigot, you've got to lay the other way. There's nowhere to put your head and you're sitting up and you're constantly sliding down from the, it just sounds really uncomfortable.
It really does. So do you know the real meaning of tub thumping?
Oh, tell me.
The title derives from British slang for aggressive political protesting.
This song's about aggressive political protesting?
I don't know if it is, but like that's what tub thumping means in the UK.
It means aggressive political protesting.
Hmm.
This song's about getting knocked down and getting back up again and drinking.
According to the lead singer, the song is about resilience of ordinary people. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You know, like that. You know, it's just it's a song for every man.
What's all the drinking references?
I mean, people drink a lot in.
So it's about two things. It's about political protesting, standing up for yourself, and drinking.
Sure,
kind of called bullshit.
Yeah, there's a lot more probably to it than that.
But yeah, this song sucks. Like, it's very repetitive. It was one of those songs that, like, it's kind of one of those. This is one of those songs that, like, in this time in my high school, it was the kind of song that you weren't cool. You played this song, like this song was for like people that weren't quite cool but wanted to be cool. You know what I mean? Do you know the class of high school I'm talking about?
Yeah, me.
I always like lumped you into like the weird religious type at the time.
Oh, okay.
not anymore.
I mean, I definitely listened. I had this album, so like it, I remember. I remember the cover for it. It was like a green cover with a pink face on it. It was very strange, and I don't remember any of the other music from the album. But like, I don't know, something about this, you know, but I bought a lot of albums when I was a kid. So like, I just, you know, I bought a little bit of everything. Anything that was like a hit single, you know, I definitely was buying it.
Oh man. Well, you said it, the video sucks. It's like, it's a bunch of guys bobbing their heads and just singing along. So do you remember Mr. Whitehead in high school?
Yes.
He was our marketing teacher, and he managed the student store that was like part of like his responsibility. Remember him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a cool guy. So if you took his class in the fall, you got to play fantasy football and market your team. And that's what I did. And it was super fun. It was like my favorite class I ever took. Anyway, we had like one of these days that like nothing was really going on. We were just kind of like fucking around in class. It was like a Friday before spring break or something, you know? And he was playing all this random music, and he played this song, and it was our senior year. So this was like early 2002.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey everybody, this is Adam's song. And he started playing this fucking song. And to this day, I'm kind of annoyed at him for that. Like, what the fuck does this song have to do with me? I hate this song. I don't get knocked down a lot. Like, I stand tall, bitch. Like, what is that about?
I don't, he was just trying to, you know, pull something together. I don't know.
It was just one of those things that people say.
Yeah.
So do you think UK has a history of making annoying singles? Like, since the Beatles, don't you feel like they have a lot of one-hit wonders?
I think they have a lot of one-hit wonders to America, like, because typically bands like Chumbawamba, I don't know what their, like, success is outside of Tub Thumping, but, like, yeah, like, they're probably big in the UK, and then they had one song in America. But yeah, over the, like, especially in the 90s, I can think of a ton of like Oasis had Wonderwall. And like, that's not, I actually like Wonderwall, but there's a handful of other UK, like Robbie Williams has a song, you know, Spice Girls obviously had multiple hits, but like, it all started with like Tell You What I Want or what, like, whatever that song's called. But yeah, like, there is a lot of annoying UK songs that came out of the 90s, particularly.
So when we went to Ireland last year, people in Ireland are obsessed with fucking Oasis. Like, whenever Wonderwall or something comes on, the whole fucking bar sings. And I'm just like rolling my eyes. Like, I do not like them. I do not like that band.
I mean, I don't really like the people in it. But I like Wonderwall. I've broed out with it with my brother. My brother can do Wonderwall. And he used to, whenever, remember Rock Band? We used to have Rock Band. Yeah. And it was like the one song like that he could do. And we always made him do it when we did like Rock Band nights.
I never really got into Rock Band. I'm just not very musical.
That's fair. Personally.
Anyway.
You karaoke though. You do multiple songs karaoke.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little different. You're like at a bar, you're drinking and you're performing for a crowd.
Right.
Like, Rock Band was always like you're in a basement with your two or three buddies and you're, I don't know, you're playing a game together.
Oh, we were definitely drinking. It was like me, Abby, Jordan, like other, maybe like Matt, Nate, Brand, like, yeah, we were all drinking and playing that. So
Matt was surprisingly good at Rock Band or Guitar Hero.
Yeah, video games. So
enough about Tub Thumping and Chumbawamba. Well, also, can we talk about how stupid that name is? Chumbawamba? the name. That's like when you give a 7-year-old the responsibility of naming a dog, he comes up with dumb shit like Chumbawamba.
So like the name like doesn't mean anything. It's signified nothing. And then like apparently the lead singer or someone in the band, the name came from a dream that he had about gender confusion. And he found that the male and female public bathrooms were labeled Chumba and Wamba. And so that's where you got Chumbawamba. So doesn't really mean much.
a lot of dreams are just like random chaos happening in our brains.
I've been having crazy dreams. I will say this, and this will come up later, and maybe it was because we're doing The Wedding Singer, but I had a dream about my friend Nick Winterstein last night. Like Nick Winterstein, who passed away in 2008, was in my dream, and I like talked to him, and it was like, it's like the first time I've ever dreamt about like my friend, like, and at least in a really long time. And I have a specific story about The Wedding Singer with him. And maybe that's why I had the dream. But it was bizarre. And,
you should tell the story now since we're on the topic.
Oh yeah. Well, we always talk about like how we, you know, watched the movie and saw it. Like I saw this movie in the theater in 1998 with my friend Nick Winterstein, and like it was just a movie that like Nick was always, he was a comedy guy. Like he introduced me to like a lot of comedy from like Dave Chappelle and other, you know, other comedians. And but we always loved going to see comedies at Newport Cinema, and where Nick lived, he lived in this neighborhood near Newport Cinema called Camelot, and we would just walk and go see movies in the summer. And I forget when this movie came out, but we definitely went and saw it together. And it was like we just died laughing the entire time. It was hilarious. It was fun to watch. And, you know, it was just something that always comes back. And like, there's this little one-liners that like he would probably just say all the time throughout high school that came from this movie. That none of them are really coming off the top of my head right now, but like, it was a quotable movie that we talked about a lot. And like, it is weird that like I had a dream about him last night, like a vivid dream of talking to him.
Well, I don't know if we'll cut this or not, but what happened in the dream?
I was like at a gas station. Like I was working at a gas station, and like it had like a restaurant in the gas station. I was working at both of the places, and he just came into the restaurant and we talked and caught up. That was it. It was a very weird dream. I was watching the show Silo last night. It's an Apple TV movie or show. And I had watched that, and there was other pieces of that show that were in my dream, but I have no idea why Nick was in it.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you remember during the catch up? Do you remember what he said about himself?
No, I don't remember anything he said. Like I just remember talking to him. Yeah. So
now is the time for my favorite part of the show.
Brennan's bad synopsis. Ow.
So the budget for this movie was only $18 million, and the box office was $123 million. So almost 10 times as much as the budget. So the movie is about a wedding singer. Robbie Hart he's a wedding singer. The movie takes place in the 80s, and yeah, and the movie just kind of opens with him at a wedding, or is it a? It is a wedding, right? It's not a bar mitzvah. I guess really the plot of this movie is that Robbie Hart, Adam Sandler's character, is kind of like a hopeless romantic. He's also engaged. He's getting married very soon, and he works with a wedding company that kind of does the catering, does all the things. It has this like cast of characters that kind of surround him in there, that, and they're all kind of friends and family. And like, is a wedding planning thing like a family business? Do you know anything about that? Or is that just like, is he just a wedding singer? It kind of is confusing how they all know each other and are friends. And it
seems to me like they work for the venue.
Oh, okay.
And the weddings and bar mitzvahs, at least, that we know about.
Oh, so this was all at the same venue. That makes sense. That makes a lot more sense now. Yeah. And basically, at the beginning of the movie, he meets a young lady, Drew Barrymore, and what, remind me of her character's name. I'm sure it's listed right here. Julia. Okay, that's right. I should know that her name is Julia, because her name is going to become Julia Gulia. But Julia's new. She's like a waitress, and she's a. Her and Adam Sandler just kind of befriend each other, and she is getting married too, and. And she's marrying this awful guy named Glenn. God, this is awful. I don't really know where to go, because it's like kind of, there's all this. So basically, if we stick on Adam Sandler's character, Robbie, he's getting married. He finds out he gets left at the altar by his fiance. He went at his wedding that's coming up. And this leads him on a, like, I don't, for lack of a better term, he's just like, he's depressed. He's all like, he's still doing Wedding Singer, and but now he's like a terrible wedding singer, and he's singing terrible songs. Everyone hates what he's singing. Everyone thinks he's going through a mental crisis. Well, I'm like going through not a midlife crisis, but you know what I mean?
Nervous breakdown.
A nervous breakdown. That's what I was looking for. And during this time, he's also helping his new friend Julia, like, wedding plan her wedding because she needs some help. And her husband, Glenn, who's a womanizer, terrible human being, is no help. And so Adam steps in to kind of help her out. And through this process of helping Julia out, he realizes that he's in love with her. And there's a lot of other stuff that happens in the middle of all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of shenanigans. But there's a one pivotal scene at the end of the movie where Julia is going to, like, you know, she's going to leave Glenn and go profess her love to Adam Sandler's character. And Adam Sandler's hooked up with his ex-girlfriend again, or ex-fiance. And that leads her to then go back to Glenn. And instead of having their big fancy wedding that they're going to have, they decide to fly to Las Vegas, and before that can happen, Adam Sandler interrupts that, gets on the plane, sings some sappy song with the help of Billy Idol, and then she leaves Glenn, and the rest is history. That's the, like, the very, very short version of the Brennan's Bad synopsis. But I think I hit all the high points.
I think it was still bad.
It's terrible.
Being short. So we said we accomplished what we said we were going to do.
Yes. What was that? That we is going to is bad.
So that was Brennan's Bad synopsis on the wedding. I mean, the plot's not that complicated. It's a fucking wedding singer, and it's a love triangle,
you know,
essentially.
I like to explain things. I like to over explain what's going on, Adam.
Right. Good job, Brennan. And it obviously made a lot of money. It's very popular at the time, you know, when we saw it. So do you remember, like, your first impressions?
Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, like, I look back and love this movie now. And now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if I ever saw this movie much after I had seen it. Like, I don't think I ever owned it. And I definitely watched more of, like, Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, like, over and over again than I ever watched Wedding Singer. But maybe I'm looking at it, like, with, like, my older glasses, and now I love it because it's, like, because I'm married, and but maybe at the time I don't know how much I liked it. How do you remember seeing it?
Yeah. So I've told this story a couple times on this podcast, but I had a friend in middle school named Joe, and I'll leave it at that. And Joe, like, murdered somebody, like, in high school or right after high school. And they cut off the dude's head, and they still haven't found the head, and Joe's in prison now. And so I feel for you, Joe. I hope everything works out in prison. But, like, this kid and I were friends in middle school, and me and Joe went and saw The Wedding Singer, just like you and Nick did, and we loved it. We thought it was really funny. We thought it was really quotable. And, like, there's so many just small little slice of humor in old Adam Sandler movies that were so funny, like stuff that comes out of completely nowhere. These random characters come out and act completely nuts, but they say the funniest shit. Then they just move on, and the plot keeps going. And I just love that about early Adam Sandler. Like, I felt like that stuff worked at the time. And for whatever reason, that shtick didn't work for me after a while, but it was still working now. It was still working in Wedding Singer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, because Waterboy also came out in 1998, and I have no idea if we'll probably do that someday. But
after this, it came out later that year, like in September, right when we started freshman year of high school. Waterboy came out.
That makes sense. And I hated Waterboy. I it's like one of my most unfavorite Adam Sandler movies. And then I feel like all the Adam Sandler movies that followed Waterboy, I equally did not like. I never liked Little Nicky. Did not really. I like Big Daddy. Like, that's probably the one I liked the most after that. But, like, of other ones, like, I just feel like, and then he got into his more serious mode with, like, Punch Drunk Love and stuff like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Waterboy was the beginning of the end. Daddy was good, and Punch Drunk Love was good. But then there was a lot of shit until we came to Uncut Gems. A lot of shit.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about. Like, that because he just has made so many movies since the 90s that, like, yeah, because it was like the little, yeah, this is, Mr. Deeds. Oh, that movie's awful.
I didn't like Anger Management.
Anger Management, that's terrible. Another bad, yeah, it's awful. Yeah, it's,
I didn't even see a lot of the more recent ones like Click or Blended. I think I saw 50 First Dates. That was okay-ish.
Mm.
But I don't know. Like, Adam Sandler just wore out for me starting in the aughts. But in 1998, he was still really fucking funny. And we liked this movie a lot. So I'd like to get into some of the main characters a little bit. Obviously, Adam Sandler plays Robbie Hart. You knew him at the time from Saturday Night Live. And for those of you that didn't watch it and didn't live it, Saturday Night Live from 1989 to 1995 were... it. You can't even call them the golden years. They were like... they were the diamond years. Those seasons were so funny, and they were so packed full of really funny individuals that all went on to have really successful careers as comedians and actors. And I just can't say enough about, like, if you like sketch humor and you haven't watched SNL 1989 to 1995, like, you need to right away. Like, that it makes everything else seem bad. Like, it's so funny. Like, I can't watch Saturday Night Live anymore because it's like, it's so far below funny what it was at the time that I'm so disappointed by it. I just can't watch. So, and Adam Sandler was like their star along with Chris Farley. Like, they were probably the two most popular people on it. And then he did Airheads, and he had done Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore before this, which were both really well received by like males, like,
yeah,
the 35. Like this dude killed it with our demographic, like right at the time. Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore were so funny. And then The Wedding Singer came out, and it had, you could tell he was like, okay, it's kind of a love story, so it's not going to be exactly like Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore. But then you saw it, and it's like, okay, it is a love story, but it's still totally funny. The ratio of humor to love is so fucked up in every love movie that comes, like romantic comedy that comes out in like 2021 or whatever. But in like in 1998, your ratio of humor to romance and romantic comedy was still a really favorable ratio. It's like, 90% humor, 10% love. It's not like 75% love, 5% humor, and 20% awful humor, like which is what I feel like most romantic comedies are. Like, it was still like, it had a really it had a really good opportunity for people that aren't into love stories to laugh. Like, every scene almost, there's like hard laughs coming.
Absolutely. To go off like with more of like Adam Sandler, like, I feel like The Wedding Singer was the first one where he had, like, all of them had like a cast of characters that were like funny, but like this one was the first one that, like, I felt like all of the secondary and third character, like background actors were, there was just so many like little cameos, like Steve Buscemi, John Lovitz. And like, obviously we'll talk a little bit more about that, but like, this is where like it all kind of like, I think this is like the best cameo movie of all of the Adam Sandler movies. Like Waterboy does it a little bit, obviously. Not a little bit, does a lot of it, but this one did it the best.
Yeah, I would argue Billy Madison did it really well too. There was Chris Farley and...
oh, that's true.
It's Norm Macdonald.
And Steve Buscemi's in that one as well. Yeah.
So Adam Sandler is a wedding singer, Brennan said, and he gets left at the altar like 15 minutes into the movie. So the very first 15 minutes, he's like this really nice, happy guy, and he believes in love, and he believes in weddings and all that. And then... and he has this horrible experience where he gets humiliated and left at the altar by his like 80s rock chick fiance. And after that, he like turns sour. Now he like hates love, and he hates being a wedding singer, and he's going crazy. And like, he's immediately after he gets left at the altar, like, he lives with his sister and his brother-in-law and their and his two little nephews. And his two little nephews are always giving him shit.
Hello. Hey, Ron is here.
Oh, the goofball brothers.
Is it true that you're in the middle of a nervous breakdown?
No.
Nervous breakdown.
Who said that?
Everybody's been saying that.
Everybody? You're 8 years old. You only know your parents. What are you talking about?
Is it true that you're going to end up in a mental institution?
It kind of hit me when I was like pulling the clips earlier. But I must have owned this album and listened to it a lot because they use a lot of like the little one-liners in the album, and you can like, especially with like, my parents said you're going to the mental institution, and I think they like and it goes into another song.
Oh, you had the soundtrack.
I had the soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack did really well. I didn't focus on it in the notes, but I could have. The soundtrack sold really well in the UK and the US.
That makes sense. It was just a kind of a hit list of like great 80s rock music. And then it had like all of Adam Sandler's like original songs that he did, which he was kind of famous for at the time. And now that I think about it, like, I didn't like it's he does it so well in this movie, his songs, that you don't ever really consider them being like part of like his stand up, but they're totally like stand up songs.
Yeah, he did a good job. So at this point in the movie, everybody around him is like telling him, hey, dude, you're acting psycho. He has this horrible experience at the next wedding he sings at, which we'll talk about later. But he sort of like realizes, okay, I need to do something. And what he decides to do is to be nice and help this Drew Barrymore with her wedding. So he agrees to just like go with her on all these little like outings that brides to be go on, where you like go test the cake and you like hire a limo driver and all that shit. He's like there cracking Adam Sandler jokes, and like they're like developing their bond throughout that time. And that's sort of how the romance happens. And the next character is obviously Drew Barrymore as Julie Sullivan. We knew her at the time as the little girl from E.T. and Cat's Eye. I don't know if you remember that. She was also the little girl in Firestarter. And then she had done the movie Scream the year before. But there was a lot of shit in between that wasn't good and really wasn't worth bringing up. Brennan said she's engaged to some douchebag named Glenn Guglia, who's like a bonds trader, and he drives a DeLorean, and he buys a CD player for $700. And he's like 11 years older than Barrymore, which doesn't seem like a big deal at the time we were watching the movie. But now when you look at the Where Are They Now photos, he seems so much older than her. like ridiculously. He looks like he's about to be put into the ground.
Yeah, I was like looking at his IMDb and I was like, this is Glenn from The Wedding Singer. He looks like an old man. And then I was like, he's only 3 years younger than my dad. And so that means like when he was playing that character, like he was probably like 33, and like Drew Barrymore was like 24. So like, I guess that is, you know, it is like 10 years. And but it is kind of funny how I mean, this movie is almost 30 years old, which makes me feel super old.
It's more like she's like 29 and he was 40, something like, I think it's closer to that. But yeah, that was the right ratio. And Glenn is, look, he's a tool, and but more than that, he's like this certain character that romantic comedies just have a lot of, right? When you have a romantic comedy, usually somebody has to break up with somebody to be with the main character. And you can't have that be rooting to the audience when they're with likable people. So you put them with these really unlikable people, which I've always found to be kind of cheap. Like, I don't mind it in this movie because this movie makes it funny, but in most like standard comedies where they're not trying to be funny and they just make the dude or whoever like such a dick, I don't know, I just feel like it's kind of bad, not bad writing exactly, but like bad, I just feel like it's the easy way to go. Like it's not very creative, it's not very thoughtful. And I personally think that if I'm going to watch like a real love story, I hate romantic comedies. I almost never find them funny, but I'd rather watch like a true love story than a romantic comedy. It would be more interesting to me to have it be more complicated. Like you're leaving a good person, but you're just not attracted to them.
Are we going to get into the casting of the Glenn, or did you see any of that?
So I didn't do a casting corner this time.
So I have read this when I was kind of prepping for the show, and I think I was probably watching the movie, and I was like, I was on IMDb kind of like looking up stuff. The role of Glenn was originally written with Jim Carrey in mind. And then another consideration was Christopher McDonald, who played Shooter McGavin, obviously, in Happy Gilmore. This movie would have been totally different if Jim Carrey would have been Glenn Guglia. Like, it wouldn't, that doesn't even really make
sense. He's not good looking.
Well, yeah, and I just... Glenn doesn't have that big of a role to like have Jim Carrey be in it, because like this is 96. Like it, I mean, Jim Carrey was already, I mean, he was pretty much Jim Carrey at that time, right? The other consideration was John Cryer, Charlie Sheen, and Matthew Broderick. So,
yeah, John, I don't like John Cryer like at all, and I don't really like Charlie Sheen, especially since you know he raped Corey Haim, right? It's kind of an unlikable thing to do, and.
Yeah, totally.
And who's Matthew Broderick? I don't know. I guess he would be okay. I guess. Other than that, like, I didn't like anybody.
He'd be too short. and too likable. He'd be too likable. Yeah. You'd see Matthew Broderick and you'd think like Ferris Bueller's, and you'd like.
I don't like him that much though, so it would have worked for me. Like, I don't like Matthew Broderick like everyone else does. Like, okay. I don't like Ferris Bueller that much. I find it like annoying. So the rest of the characters are kind of inconsequential. Like, I don't want to spend a ton of time on them, but like, you have the, he has this sweet old grandma that he's giving singing lessons to, and she pays him with meatballs. And then Ben Stiller's wife, Christine Taylor, is sort of like this sexy, slutty waitress that like everyone talks about having have had sex with already. And she's just like been around the block, and she's Julia's cousin. And then one of the Arquette siblings is in it. Alexis Arquette plays this Boy George knockoff character whose name is George. And then Sandler's ex-girlfriend, the rocker chick, Linda, her name is like Angela Featherstone. I think she was in it. But like, I don't know. I just don't know how important most of these characters are. We knew Christine Taylor from the movie Hey Dude and the Brady Bunch, the show Hey Dude and the Brady Bunch movies. And I guess I thought it was worth pointing out that this is like an early trans role in like an A-list Hollywood movie for Alexis Arquette, where there really wasn't many of those like ever through 2010 even. There really was not many of these fully trans roles in A-list movies.
That's fair. Yeah. No, I actually really enjoy Alexis Arquette's role in the movie. They recently passed away, and but yeah, it was interesting. Like, that's a pretty risky move to take in a movie, but I think the character is such a, I mean, I don't even really think it's played trans at the time, because I kind of feel like this was before Alexis Arquette was Alexis Arquette. I think they were credited as Alexis. So I'm not sure. It is an interesting role. So, really funny. Like,
I think people accepted it because everyone knew Boy George, and it was such a Boy George joke. Like, and it's like, if you were familiar with Boy George at all, you just thought it was funny, even if you didn't have one thought one way or the other about trans. Like, you knew that it was a joke on Boy George.
At the very beginning of the movie, like, Adam Sandler takes a break, and then so he leaves George to like play a song, and George only can play one song, which is a Boy George song. Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? I don't know if that's the actual name of the song, but when the song's over, George has to play it again, which is, I thought was hilarious.
Sandler's ex is this woman named Linda, and she's not in that movie that much, but whenever they talk about her, it's pretty funny.
They really just paint a picture that she's a terrible person, and like that she was always a terrible person, that she wasn't ever really, they weren't ever really meant to be together. Like, he was too nice and she was too much of a kind of a bitch.
Well, she was a groupie for his band. That's all. She was a fucking groupie, and now he's not like in a band anymore. So she like, she's in love with this old idea of him. And like the little kids, his little nephews call her out on her shit.
I'll spend the rest of my life with
you. Hey, Linda. You're a bitch.
Yeah, she was really, very unlikable in this movie.
Yeah, she was the female version of Glenn. Like, she was just like somebody that you didn't want them to end up with, that you rooted against, that isn't a good person. And that little kid with like the, what's it called when kids do their R's, Brennan? A lisp, or a name for it.
I mean, it's a speech impediment. I mean, I couldn't say my R's. Like, so I pretty much sounded like this kid at one point when.
I thought maybe there's a special word for it. Anyway, this kid can't do his R's very well. And it's really cute. It's like really funny.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, outside of, like, the rest of the cast, like, Christine Taylor was, I think this might have made me, I had a humongous, I don't have, like, I wouldn't say, like, she was, like, a celebrity crush when I was this age, but, like, she's very attractive in this movie. But then I wanted to point out, like, Alan Covert is in the movie, and he's in all of Adam Sandler's movies, and he plays, he's just, like, a friend, but he always just has this great little one-liners and little zingers. So yeah, after the cast of characters, we got to go to the most nostalgic scenes. And what is one of your most nostalgic scenes, Adam?
The opening scene is the opening credits scene. It's a really funny scene where he's in a good mood and he's doing this wedding, and Steve Buscemi is like the drunken best man who gets up to give this bad speech that we'll play in a second. But the opening scene, like the first like 2 minutes, 3 minutes of the movie, there's all this really funny things going on at this wedding during the credits. So like, you're seeing the name of like an actor for a moment, then it cuts to the wedding for a moment, and there's something zany happening. Then it cuts back to like the credits. It was a really good way to like chop it up. There's like, and so first of all, you see all the 80s dance moves, which like gives, and he's singing an 80s song. So it like puts you in the scene like right away. Okay, we're in the 80s. There's like a pantsless baby for some reason. There's this one grandma who's grabbing some dude's ass like really aggressively. And then there's a grandpa pinching Julia's ass. One of the groomsmen is giving booze to a minor who proceeds to like puke in a dumpster. There's this one like young dude who's like striptease dancing on a different old grandma. Then there's the boy George joke, and like all of this happens within like the first 3 minutes, and you're just like you just can't stop laughing in the very beginning of the movie. You're like, wow, this movie's gonna be great.
It does really set the scene for like what you're gonna get throughout the rest of the movie.
And then it leads right into this really funny speech by Steve Buscemi, giving the best man speech.
Like the time I couldn't find my car. Because Harold, you know, he's always been the dependable one. And I've always been the screwed up one. Right, Dad? Why can't you be more like your brother? Harold would never beat up his landlord.
He's drunk as shit.
I could see why you pulled that clip.
There's so much anti-landlord hate in the universe out there, and nobody checks it. It's okay to talk shit about your landlords for me. So they're always like pictured as like this dirty, smelly, like loser, like Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, with like a wife beater and chest hair and like a big gold chain, and he's just like this racist prick. Like that's how they like portray every, like, it's the kind of thing that you can laugh at. You could say somebody beat up his landlord and everyone thinks that's funny. Like, oh yeah, but say that about like almost anything else, and suddenly that joke's not that funny. Harold would never beat up his barber, you know? Harold would never beat up the lady at the deli at Safeway. Like, none of those things are funny, but it's funny to beat up your landlord, and I think that's fucked up. That's all. That's all.
I kind of think it's funny to beat up your landlord. I mean, if I could beat up my landlord, I'd do that.
Yourself? You'd beat up yourself, or you'd beat up the mortgage banker?
I'm just joking. It is funny how much it is you are able to like make fun of landlords, though. Because why is it? Because it is, because it's like the equivalent of a tax collector. Like, well, yeah, I don't know. Like,
it's also one of those ratio things. Like, it's like, this is why like straight people used to feel okay making fun of gay people. Like, they're so. Like, there's just so many more straight people, it's totally okay. And renters, there's so many more renters than landlords, it's just okay.
Not the same, but I'll give you...
That's not the same. The ratio is the same, is what I'm talking about. Like, it's like a 10 to 1 rate.
I'll give you a pass. Go ahead. I see what you're saying.
So what's one of your favorite scenes then?
I mean, there's a couple, but like I enjoy the final scene in this movie, which we don't have a clip for, but like everything surrounding when Adam Sandler gets on the plane to like kind of pause everything, and then he like gets Billy Idol's help to like play a song, and like Billy, it's kind of silly, but it's also hilarious at the same time.
I found out Billy Idol agreed to be in the movie because his like 10-year-old son at the time was a huge Adam Sandler fan. And he said, well, if my son's going to go see this Adam Sandler movie, I might as well be in it. And so he said, yes.
I feel like that's anytime there's a cameo and like people are like, I wanted to do this because my kids are a big fan of Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. Or like, I'm like, why? Like, you're just in a fucking, you got probably paid to be in the movie. Like, did you have to use your kids as an excuse?
I don't think Billy Idol had done a lot of acting, so...
Definitely boost the appeal, not the appeal, but like how the public's opinion on Billy Idol at the time, though. And not to say that he had a bad opinion, but like definitely got him more into like the people know about him. Like, I definitely didn't know who Billy Idol was.
Oh, really?
At the time, very well. And like, yeah.
Oh, he was one of the actually very few 80s rock stars that I grew up always knowing who they were and always liking them. Like, I would always get confused by the hair bands when I was young. Like, I could never remember who sang which songs, like between like Motley Crue and like Poison. And they all looked the same to me. Like, they all looked exactly the same. But Billy Idol had short hair and he was by himself. And he was like distinguishable to me. Like, okay, that's what Billy Idol looks like. Where all the hair bands, I could never remember.
Yeah.
One scene that I wanted to get into that I like is, so right after Sandler gets dumped, somebody convinces him to go back to work, like his buddy Alan. Brennan said Covert. I I don't know if it's covert or covert, but like Alan, this guy plays Sammy. He's like Michael Jackson loving like limousine driver. Sammy convinces Adam to work way too early, and he does. And he hates love at this point, and he hates weddings. And so he's doing this. He's ruining this one couple's wedding with his horrible attitude about love and weddings. And the father of the bride is getting really pissed off at him like this whole time. And it's kind of an ugly wedding. And we've got some good audio from Adam Sandler talking about how he really feels.
But the worst thing is that me, Fatty, Sideburns Lady, and the mutants over at Table 9, we'll never ever find a way to better the situation, because apparently we have absolutely nothing to offer the opposite sex.
You are the worst wedding singer in the world, buddy.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
I love the like the nod of understanding when he starts giving this from like the Sideburns Lady, and there's like. And it everyone's reaction who's like getting called out in this is hilarious.
Yeah, they're all very like, yeah, he's telling the truth. We have no luck with the opposite sex. We hate love. This whole thing seems like a sham to us. So the mutants at Table 9 has become like a thing in my life. And like when I go to weddings, Jill and I will often decide who's the Table 9, right? Like, who are the mutants at Table 9? So, like, we forgot to do it at this most recent wedding, but when we were younger, we would find the mutant table. And there usually is one. That's like, there awesome. Usually is, like, a really ugly table somewhere at a wedding.
Yeah, that's very true. It actually reminds me, you gave a speech at my wedding, and it would have been really funny if you, like, had said that in your speech, like, as, like, a callback to the wedding here. But you did not do that. Thank you.
You're welcome. I wish we had video of that. Like, I barely remember it. Like, I remember doing it, but I could only tell you a couple things that were said. Something about, like, I told a story about you going to a play, but that's really all I remember.
Another great scene is when Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler are trying to pick another wedding singer. I'm actually not sure why Adam Sandler's not going to be a wedding singer. Is it just because he's going to be at the wedding, or it's because he just doesn't want to be a part of weddings? I don't know. But we get a nice...
Cool, he's going to be a guest at her wedding, so she's not asking him to work it.
That makes sense. And so we get a really nice John Lovitz doing his character. I don't know what his character's name is, but
his name is Jimmy Moore.
Jimmy Moore. And here he is.
Yes, it's ladies' night, and the feeling's right. Oh, yes, it's ladies' night, oh, what a night. Oh, yes, it's ladies' night, and the feeling's right.
Man, I've never seen it from this perspective before. Is this what I look like?
No, you're much better than him. He's ridiculous.
Well, that's John Lovitz performing Ladies' Night.
Fucking love John Lovitz. Like, I think he's so funny. Like, everything he does, I just grab my sides. Like, that scene is so funny. And at the time in the 90s, he had just finished The Critic, like, a couple years earlier. Something I always plug whenever I get the chance. Like, if you guys have never seen the old cartoon show The Critic and you like 90s comedy, you have to check out The Critic. It is so funny. And it's all John Lovitz being John Lovitz. And he had been on SNL with Sandler. And he's really funny in League of Their Own. Check out our League of Their Own podcast. And he's just like a really, really funny guy that I don't think gets enough credit.
He got his show, obviously, but he never got, and he was obviously on SNL, but like he never got like that movie to like really shine in. Maybe we're like gonna get a Twilight John Lovitz now, like where he like does some really cool role. I don't know. I would love to see him do something cool.
Yeah, his show was The Critic, and it's a cartoon, and so he never got like the facial recognition that all these other famous comedians got for their show, right? Their really funny, successful show that ran for a few seasons, and his was The Critic, which was animated. So and that was like right a few years after he finished SNL, so it was like his little window to get like kind of famous, and he did. But he didn't get facial recognition.
Right.
So the other scene that we'll talk. So right. Excuse me. Cut that. So right after that, because they don't hire him. Like, she's like, you've inspired me to hire a DJ. And so John Lovitz leaves, but all his like equipment's still set up. And Drew Barrymore asks Adam Sandler if he's still like writing songs or working on anything. And he begrudgingly agrees to sing her this song that he's been writing about his relationship with Linda. And he says he like wrote half of it when we were there together and half of it when they broke up.
I can't believe I found a love that's so pure and true. But it all was bullshit. It was a goddamn joke. And when I think of you, Linda, I hope you fucking choke. I hope you're glad with what you've done to me. I lay in bed all day.
You can go listen to the full song on Spotify or Apple Music, I'm sure. It's a very that's a song about his ex-girlfriend or ex-fiance.
Yeah, super funny, right? Like, so funny.
I loved Adam Sandler as a like his comedy songs growing up, and I probably listened to these songs way too much when I was like, when like on CD, but like they're hilarious.
Yeah, some of his stuff was really funny. He released a couple comedy CD albums essentially where he's like singing funny songs. There was one like the goat song or something. I had that on a CD at one point. Mm. Yeah, like he made a lot of money and fans doing that at the time. And this song was really funny. It was totally on brand for him.
People don't realize that Adam Sandler was this amazing stand-up comedian, right? Like, I feel like he doesn't do stand-up much anymore. I think he's done like some every once in a while, but like he used to be one of the best stand-up comedians, and I imagine if he came back and did more stand-up it would be really good again. But like, it's weird to think that, like, it's kind of like how people don't know that like Will Smith was the Fresh Prince. Like, people don't know that Adam Sandler did stand-up, but I guess that's probably like a lot of comedians.
Yeah, I don't know that it would work now. I kind of view Adam Sandler like I view, like, I don't know, Eminem. Like, they were good when they were young because of how angry they were. And they, like, harnessed all this weird angry energy into something creative. And it made them work really hard and be better than everyone else. But then they got all the accolades and got rich and got hot wives and famous and millionaires. And, like, you just can't fake poor and desperate. You can't fake it. As much as you, like, want to stay poor and desperate to help drive you to be the best version of yourself, you're just not. And like, it just takes a toll on your talent, in my opinion.
Totally.
And like, as they got older and more successful and all the accolades, you just don't have that inner drive anymore to prove to everyone how great you are. It's just not there. Everybody fucking knows. And so I just think it's human nature for a lot of people to just start mailing it in. I'm not really saying Eminem mailed it in, but I kind of feel like Adam Sandler did over the years with his comedy. Like, stuff stopped being clever. It just started being like sort of a recycled version of stuff he'd already done.
That's fair. Yeah, that's very true.
The last scene I want to talk about is the bar mitzvah scene. So because Adam Sandler has such an awful relationship with weddings after he gets left to the altar, he still needs to make money, so he does this one bar mitzvah scene, which is super fun. Brennan, have you ever been to a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah?
No, I haven't, no.
I got to work a bat mitzvah once in Spokane, like the year before I moved to California, as a videographer. I got a gig being a videographer for this woman's daughter's bat mitzvah. And I'll tell you about it off air sometime, but it's a big deal. Right. In these families, like it's like it's your kid's wedding. Essentially, it's the biggest day of your kid's life, the biggest event you're ever going to throw for your kid before their wedding. And it's the day in their religion that they classify them as like, OK, now you're a man or a woman, like you're an adult now, like you have real responsibilities. It's like a big deal.
Yeah.
And all your friends, everybody gives you presents and they're super fun. It's like a kid's version of a wedding. Anyway. So there's this one like kind of fat, ugly kid at the bar mitzvah, and he's kind of feeling down because he got rejected by some girl. And Adam Sandler like sets up this little scene where like Drew Barrymore gets to dance with him and make him seem really cool. And he proceeds to like grab her ass and start like squeezing her butt, like in front of everybody. And then like Adam Sandler starts dancing with some like ugly little Jewish girl. And he puts her hands on his ass which is kind of weird, but like she like starts grabbing Adam Sandler's ass, even though she's like 12. And then they like cuts to this wide shot at one point, and like everybody's on the dance floor, like everybody at the bar mitzvah, and everybody's hands are on each other's asses. Like they're all dancing hand on ass, like the whole fucking place. There was a lot of stuff like that in this movie that worked really well. It's like the way they shot it. It's not just the idea that people are grabbing each other's asses that's funny. It's the way that they shoot it and how that joke hits you all of a sudden after something sweet going on. Like, this director really knew how to set up jokes.
That was a really good scene. And
Brennan mentioned the last scene where they get married on a plane, but leading up to that, Adam Sandler tries to tell Drew Barrymore how he feels, but he misinterprets some of her feelings and he gets all mad at himself and he goes out drinking. And he doesn't drink and he gets like punched out by Glenn and he's hanging out with his limousine driver and this one old man at the bar and he's spilling his heart out to this old man at the bar and the old man gives him some very good advice.
You need a prostitute.
So anyway, he winds up at home and his ex fiance Linda's there hoeing it up and they kind of spend the night together. It's a little unclear what happened, but he didn't want to. He was just drunk. And then Brennan told you the rest, and they get married. And Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore end up getting married, and Steve Buscemi's the wedding singer at their wedding, which was random but funny, and everything works out. And that's kind of the whole movie. But we wanted to get into some other things. So anyway, I was going to say how much I love 90s comedies like this because I feel like they did a really good job. They would always keep the characters light and goofy. The scenes were short. They would go in, they'd hit the joke, and they'd move on, and they wouldn't linger. There's no lingering. There's no touchy-feely stuff. It was like, okay, this movie's going to do what it can to make you laugh, all right? And there is going to be a plot, and there's even a little bit of love story in this one, but every chance we can, we're also going to try and make you laugh. And I feel like I have this battle going on internally and against all my peers about like how they don't make comedies anymore. And like it's because I'm used to comedies that are consistently making attempts to be funny. And some hit, some don't, but at least they're trying. And these like modern comedies, like fucking Lady Bird and shit like that, like they have like four or five good jokes the whole movie, and then something serious happens, and the movie's pretty much a fucking drama the rest of the way, if not for a little few quips or their attitude towards things. But it's like they're trying to tell you that the character is kind of funny, but the jokes aren't there. Like the writer and the director aren't setting up these clear, obvious jokes to hit you in the face. And it's something that really frustrates me with modern quote comedies. I just don't think they're funny anymore. And whereas I think the 90s, there was like, I don't know, 40 great comedies made in the 90s. And there's been like five the last 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, the 90s is where a good time for comedies. Like obviously there's a lot of reasons why comedies don't work much anymore, and that's a lot to do with cancel culture, woke culture, whatever you want to call it. And people are just, I think, are afraid to make comedies, and they also just don't do well in the theater anymore. And that has a lot to do with, because there's just not, I mean, I can't think of one comedian that's like popular right now that could like would be a humongous box office draw. Like, because yeah, like you said, like it used to be SNL would like have this like revolving door of just humongous actors coming out of SNL, and like I kind of feel like that all kind of ended with Kristen Wiig and Jimmy Fallon, and like that's kind of where SNL kind of stopped producing great comedians, like especially like movie star comedians.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't know what changed. I don't think that there's not funny people anymore. I think those kind of scripts aren't being greenlit, and there's I remember having like a conversation with a studio guy one time, and he said that audiences now demand more of their comedies. They want more than to just laugh. They want them to be touching and all this. And I remember thinking, well, that's your opinion, buddy. I don't think that's what audiences want. I think there's plenty of people that just want to go laugh. Mm. And for some reason, there's this other group of people that want to criticize movies without depth. Like everything has to be so fucking deep for you to enjoy it, right? And I just think that's crazy to me. Like, that's like saying I only want to eat one kind of food the rest of my life. It's just not true. You want to have variety. I want a deep movie, and I also want a lighthearted comedy sometimes.
They all kind of just exist in, like, I mean, yeah, even like Ted Lasso is like, they want more. It's more, I cried more in that show. Well, not more than like, but like I cried in that show. Like, you don't cry in comedies, like, and they're not supposed to. And like, I would love something that would just make me laugh, that would in a movie format. I feel like the last thing that came out that was like super funny is like End of the World or whatever that one is called, with Seth Rogen.
World is the one where the world ends of an apocalypse, yeah, or something. This is the end. Is that what you're talking
this
about?
Is the end. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's okay. It was pretty good, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, but like you take like Bridesmaids and The Hangover and like one or two others out, and there's nothing that's universally respected as a comedy in like 20 years. Like it's been dead.
Well, even Bridesmaid like has that emotional stuff in it as well, like at the end. Like it, and like Bridesmaid is like just way, way too long of a movie. Like they could have cut like 45 minutes of that movie and made it a really good comedy, but like they put in 45 minutes of bullshit to kind of up the like the drama or like the emotions.
Judd Apatow did that. He made all of his comedies way too long, and they like, it's like, yeah, like what's that movie with Seth Rogen and he's like Knocked Up? It's like that movie's funny, but it's too long, and I don't ever want to watch it. Like this fucking Adam Sandler's Wedding Singer is 96 minutes. You barely even know by the time it's the end, and you feel great about it. You just laughed for 90 minutes, and now I'm gonna move on with my life. What the fuck is wrong with that format? It is such a winning format.
I don't know why people don't make shorter movies. They just, because they wanted to put so much content in there. Like, I don't know.
It's something I don't understand at all. So one thing that's really cool about this movie, it inspired a musical theater adaptation that had two national tours, Brennan. Like from like a writing perspective, you wrote a screenplay that was later adapted into a musical that went on national tour. Like that's really impressive. Like this movie has a lot of appeal.
Totally.
This idea.
Yeah. I would love to see that this musical. Yeah, I'd love to see this as a musical.
Yeah, me too. There's one scene that, although I'll tell you, I just saw a Clue in the theater and I was so bored because it was like, it was exactly like the movie. Mm. Like Clue came to San Francisco and like they did everything exactly like the movie did. And I was like, well, I might as well just watch the fucking movie. And I've seen the movie 20 times. Like they even did the same physical comedy stuff that the movie did. It's like, they're literally just ripping off the movie. It's like, this isn't an adaptation. This is just a ripoff. And not as good of a one, because there's no fucking Tim Curry.
I was going to say, there's no Tim Curry.
So anyway, one question that came up during this movie that I wanted to ask you, Brennan, is what do you think is the right kind of wedding kiss for a bride and groom to share at the first time in front of God and their family? Do you believe in church tongue?
God. Yeah, tasteful church tongue. Yeah, you got to give a little tongue. Like, not like you're not making out up there. Like, it's anything longer than, like, 8 seconds is probably too much, but I feel like
8 seconds.
I don't know. I don't.
Who are you, Harry? Jesus.
I have no idea. I didn't record my video, my wedding either. Like, I don't know how long we kissed for. I don't even know if me and Abby had a little tongue, but like, I don't know. I feel like that's necessary to have a little tongue.
Okay. But for 8 seconds, that's disgusting.
No. I guess you count 1, 2, 3. Yeah,
it's way longer than you think.
3 seconds. 3 seconds is normal. Anything over 3 seconds is too much.
Okay, now that I can get behind. 8 seconds. Jesus Christ. Why don't you just get her pregnant right there? Anyway, so I agree. I don't think you want a lame, dry kiss, but I don't want it to linger at all. In fact, if your kiss lingers long enough for some disgusting girl in the back to start going, oh, then you've kissed too long.
That's true.
You know the girl I'm talking about? She's already kind of drunk.
Yep.
And she's like in the back and she's into kissing or whatever. Like, or she's into wedding. I don't know. I think when the woman does that, she's not cheering the kiss so much as she is cheering the idea that this woman got married because she wants to get married or she wants to remember how she felt when she got married.
Mm.
Like, weddings are so much different emotionally to women, don't you think?
Oh, totally, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just feel like men understand exactly what's going on in the female mind of a bride. Like, I don't even pretend to understand. Like, I have such different emotional feelings on how to feel about a wedding, how to approach a wedding while I'm at a wedding. Like, it's fucking night and day from, like, my wife.
I guess it's different for me. Abby's not very emotional like that. Like, she, in a way, like, has, like, similar emotions of, like, of a, I don't want to say my wife has similar emotions of a man, but, like, she just doesn't care about that.
You're attracted to men.
What's that?
You're attracted to a woman that acts like a man, feels like
it just
man.
Like, she doesn't have that, like, sappy, like she does cry during weddings, but it's not like she doesn't, like, yeah, I can see what you're saying, though. Like, I don't have any way of wrapping my head around, like, an emotional woman, like, what the thoughts are going through her head when she's at a wedding. You're right. I don't know what that's like, because I couldn't even, because my wife doesn't even have those type of emotions at a wedding like that.
It's strange that we don't understand, because theoretically we're going through the same thing if we're the groom. But night and fucking day how we feel about
it. That's true, yeah.
Anyway, a little bit in the production history, then we'll wrap it up. The movie was written by Tim Hurley. He was an SNL writer.
Yep.
He also wrote Madison. He wrote Happy Gilmore. He wrote The Waterboy. He wrote Big Daddy. He also wrote some of the shitty ones like Little Nicky, Mr. Deeds, and a few other ones. So just like Adam Sandler, it seemed like things were better early on. Oh, I found that three really famous... So Carrie Fisher, Judd Apatow, and Adam Sandler all contributed to the rewrites of this movie, which I thought was really interesting. Three, like, pretty funny and accomplished script doctors helped make this.
I want to add to that. The script doctors, I feel like Carrie Fisher's name has come up so much during our podcast about, like, how she, like, in the 90s, like, helped doctor scripts. And she doesn't get... I mean, she's not credited most of the time, but, like, I wanted, like, a documentary on Carrie Fisher and her, like, being, like, a script doctor, because it seems like she did so many movies where she did this, and, like, what was it about Carrie Fisher that she could, like, do that? It seems so interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't know. She was smart. She had a good eye for dialogue.
Yeah.
A good ear for dialogue. She was just, I don't know. I agree. I would love to say by the fucking weirdo Star Wars people, and that's all you're going to talk about and hear about.
That's so true.
Anyway, the movie was directed by Frank Carracci? I don't
Carucci?
Know. He also directed The Waterboy, Click, Zookeeper, and Here Comes the Boom. He said he used his own painful breakup as inspiration for the movie, how he said he's like lying in bed, unable to move for like a few days and just like a total loser. And Adam Sandler has some scenes like that after he gets left at the altar. But yeah, that's the writer and director. I don't have a lot of dumb shit, to be honest. So I don't even know that we play the drop today. It's just, Brent and I got in this little argument about Drew Barrymore's asymmetrical face at Comic-Con last month. Long story short, I figured it out. She only talks out of the right side of her mouth. Like, whenever she opens her mouth to talk, only the right side opens to talk. And now you'll never unsee it.
No, I mean, I notice it because I used to work with a woman who almost indistinguishable, like, how, like, Drew Barrymore's voice to her voice. And it's also because she talks out of the right side of her mouth as well. And I was just like, and when I was looking at this in the notes, I was just like, what is it about people that only talk out of the right side of their mouth? And it comes from, like, possibly having, like, mouth trauma or something that bothers you, that, like, you just talk out of the side of your mouth all the time. Like, I can't really do it because I talk with my entire mouth, but, like, yeah, but it's also a lot of, some people find it endearing. When I watch Drew Barrymore, especially in all of her, like, Adam Sandler movies, I kind of just find her somewhat annoying. Like, I just don't, she's not a great love interest. Like, there's so many, and we didn't talk about this, but there are about 100 different actresses I would rather see in that role than Drew Barrymore. Like, and especially from the, like, late 90s, like, put Jennifer Aniston in that role. Like, you know, like, that's a softball, but, like, there are a lot more actresses that would be as good, if not better, than Drew Barrymore. Wouldn't you agree?
I think she's fine. I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion like that. I just wanted to say that her face is crooked.
Okay.
So the movie is 72% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's only 96 minutes long, which I said, which is just so luscious. Thank you, Wedding Singer, for being the perfect length of time.
Yeah.
96 minutes. Brennan, do you have anything else to say about The Wedding Singer?
No, I mean, you can't really watch it anywhere right now. Like, it wasn't on any streaming services. At least I couldn't find it. I had to rent it. And so I didn't get to finish it this last time. So I didn't get to like see the ending, but it's a good date night movie. It just would be a good movie to like introduce your kids to Adam Sandler if you wanted to. I feel like this is a good intro to Adam Sandler. I feel like because like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore are a little bit out there for kids, but like this is a fun one, I feel like. And it's like, does the 80s somewhat all right? Like we were pretty close to the 80s still, so it doesn't really feel 80-ish, but like I'm sure now it kind of feels, this it feels like a 90s movie that was trying to do an 80s movie. Like it doesn't feel really, really 80s, but they did an all right job.
Yeah, I agree. It, like when you watch Stranger Things, it feels very 80s. Yeah. And when you watch Wedding Singer, it feels like somebody's trying to do the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt about the Goldbergs too. I felt like, okay, you're just trying to do the 80s. I didn't like the Goldbergs. I don't care what anybody says.
Fun fact about John Lovitz and the Goldbergs is he reprises his role from the Wedding Singer in the Goldbergs.
That's why they're on my mind, yeah. I read that too.
So I thought that.
So anyway, we would love it if you would reprise your love for us via 5-star reviews on Apple iTunes Music. Reach out to us, like us on Facebook, like us on Instagram, reach out to Brennan, tell him how manly and distinguished his beard is looking, and email us super90sbrothers@gmail.com, at super90sbrothers on Twitter, at spocastpods for Brennan, adampitzler.com for me. For Brennan Pointer, I am Adam J. Pitzler. This has been another nervous breakdown of an episode on Super 90s Bros, Wedding Singer style. And remember, the next time you fall in love with someone who's already engaged, do whatever you can to destroy their union and impose yourself upon her.
Peace.